tell you, if you're not aware, I just learned this. The other day it was National Dog Day. Right? You know, soon there'll be greeting cards, right? Because National Dog Day, get your dog a card. And I didn't realize that until I saw people posting pictures of their dog. And so I did not, and I felt kind of bad about it. So I thought I'd tell you a story about one of my dogs, and I would have brought her this morning, but then you would not have liked her had you actually met her. But this is Trinity, the three-legged husky. She got hurt. She has three legs because she was hurt by another dog when she was about 6 weeks of age. Some of you know that story, and we adopted her because of that. Now, there is a lot of sympathy when people see her hopping around on three legs, but she is a brat. I think that is an approved word on the sermon list. I think I can use that word. As a puppy, she liked to bite Mrs. Pastor Ben. And Rachel has no memory of this. She's like, no, she bit. I have pictures of it. She has done many things. She chewed up countless amounts of shoes and other articles of clothing. We saw her steal cookies from a baby twice. She ate a new box of Chex that I found outside. And many other offenses that are too numerous to mention. Not only that, but she sleeps in our bed because Mama had a moment of weakness when we were crate training her and she was crying because she was in a crate. She is cute and she loves people, but she is a brat. Oh, and I forgot to mention that when you take a nap on the couch on Sunday afternoon after preaching a couple of sermons and teaching a class and you're a little bit tired because you've been up since about 4:30, she'll come right up to your face and bark because she doesn't like that people are sleeping and she's bored. So she's well beyond a pet blessing. I'm just telling you, that's why she didn't even come. I can't even do any good with a pet blessing anymore. And I see to the dogs that come to our pet blessing, and I think to myself, why can't I have a dog like this? Like, that is what is on my mind. Yet because of her three legs, she struggles. Not only that, but she's got a bad kneecap on one of her back legs. So she's not really a three-legged husky. She's more like a two-and-a-half-legged husky. And she has a hard time with stairs, okay? And when she's in a full gallop, she can manage two or three stairs without a problem, but she can't climb stairs if she's at a standstill. And in the house that I'm trying to sell in Chicago still, there is a laundry room with two stairs for her to climb into the rest of the house. She could never do it because she couldn't take a full gallop at these stairs. And I know what you're thinking. You think, well, then just keep her out of the laundry room. But that was the way to the backyard. She needed a way to get back into the house, and so it was always the laundry room. And so she would come in, and she'd stand at the foot of the steps and bark at us, right? And so we would go down to help her into the house over those two steps, and instead of waiting for help, she'd run back outside. And this would go on and on. So on one Monday, I decided to put my mind to fixing the problem. I went to Home Depot. I came back with about $100 worth of building supplies. And by lunchtime, I had built the very first accessible ramp for three-legged huskies. That is a picture of that ramp. Notice the beautiful flooring in my laundry room, by the way. Yeah, that's original to the house. So I'm proud of that ramp. I'm pretty sure it's up to code. Pretty sure. I think most people would be impressed by this. As a matter of fact, when we listed the house, I thought we should put it in the listing because I think it would be a benefit to anybody looking at the house. You know, home is perfect for disabled family dog because it has a custom-built accessibility ramp in the laundry room for your three-legged canine. I was vetoed on this, and hence why the house hasn't sold. It took her a month to use it. She wasn't sure about it. And so she struggled with climbing up the steps. She loved going down it because she would actually slide down it standing up. She'd kind of go into a skid. She loved using it down. But she finally figured out a way to crab walk up it sideways, and it worked. Now, I've never built a house, but I can build a dog ramp. And I know it may not seem like a big difference, but I think it's about the same, right? Okay, maybe not. I was only building onto something that already existed. I didn't look at the problem and say, well, we need to tear the house down and start from scratch because this doesn't work. I added onto what was already there. The existing structures, the steps are still in place. When there's a problem, you don't always have to tear it down to the foundation to begin again. Sometimes you add on or you build something up to strengthen it. Well, the same is true for people, that we should be building people up, not tearing them down. We heard this morning in Romans. We heard each of us should please their neighbor for their good to build them up. And you know as well as I do, we don't build people so much, but we do build them up. We see someone who's struggling in an area of their lives, and we should think about how do we add to that in a way that builds them up? How do we strengthen them in that weakness or in that failing? I can't tell you how many times over the years that I've used L braces on various things to strengthen something. Well, in a lot of ways, we should use spiritual L braces to help build people up, to strengthen them when they are weak. Now, when I talk about building people up in scriptures, I am not talking about building up self-esteem. This is not about raising self-esteem. That may be a byproduct of what we do as Christians, but that is not the deeper purpose. We are not the Optimist Club. Now, I was looking at the Optimist Club website the other day, and I like what they stand for. And if you're curious, you know, get on your smartphones, look up the Optimist Creed. And I think it's all good stuff, but we are not that club. We are the family of God. And we have deeper purposes than always looking on the sunny side of life. And yes, I would rather spend my time with an optimist than a proverbial negative Nancy any day of the week. But by far, we are much more than shiny, happy people holding hands. We are asked by Paul to build people up. Why, though? So that people can get a glimpse of Jesus who is working through us. I don't want to be known, I've said this before, I don't want to be known as a nice person, I want to be known as a follower of Jesus, and the only way I can do that is to understand and know why God has put me here. And if I want clarity on this, we do the very thing that Paul says in the reading that we just heard. Let me find it here. For everything that was written in the past was written to teach us so that through endurance and in the encouragement of scriptures, we might have hope. So to understand those purposes, we do what Paul instructs us to do, to go back into scriptures to have some clarity about life. The purposes of life. Is it more than just being smiley and positive? Did Jesus know what he was doing, or was he just making it up as he went along? So I did that very thing. I went back into scriptures this week and did some studying, and this is what we found that Jesus said about his own ministry. He said, "For the very work that the Father has given me to finish and which I am doing testifies to that the Father has sent me." So he knows where he came from, he knows where he is going, and he is doing the thing that the Father has set him out to do. And then a little bit later, he just says, and by the way, the work that which I am doing is this, to believe in the one that he, the Father, has sent. So we all know that when Jesus ascended to heaven, at the end of his ministry, he didn't say, okay, I'm done, it's all finished, it's all completed. He left the keys to the shop to us, the successive generations of Christians, to carry on that very work, to help people believe in the one that the Father has sent. And if you're not sure about that, well, in John chapter 20, he says, "Even as the Father has sent me, even so I am sending you." Now, we can't make believers. Let's be clear about that. That's God's work. But we can give people a glimpse of Jesus. And we do that through the way that we live and the things that we say and the lives that we touch when people are struggling and they need to be built up. And we build them up not so that they feel better about themselves so much, so as that they know that Jesus loves them and walks with them. And they might feel better because of that, but that's not the sole purpose of that. It always begins and ends with Jesus' love, not some generic pat you on the back, I hope you feel better. And I know you're going to roll your eyes at me when I tell you this, but I learned something amazing about another animal this week. Humpback whales. Let me tell you a little bit about humpback whales. They are the protectors of the ocean. They have been observed, and it's been in reputable journals, my wife tells me, that they have been seen stopping orcas, killer whales, from attacking smaller marine animals. 89% of humpback whale interaction with orcas were rescues of seals, sea lions, gray whales, and sunfish. The other 11% of those interactions were humpback whales saving their own calves. Matter of fact, humpback whales actually know the call of orca attack soundings. And when they hear them, they go and find and see what's going on. And one humpback whale, which is quite a bit bigger than an orca or a killer whale, will take on up to 10 killer whales. And once they engage in this behavior, this rescuing can last from 1 to 7 hours. Now, in this observation, scientists have seen that they gain nothing from doing this. They forgo rest, they forgo eating, and they also forgo socialization, which humpback whales do. And matter of fact, they are so intrigued by this that researchers are now looking into whether humpback whales are altruistic, looking for the better good, which only means this. They're looking in to see if whether or not they are sentient, they are conscious of their own behavior. Humpback whales see that the little guy is getting tromped on, and they help out. They provide aid, and they make a difference when these other animals cannot provide for themselves. There's no personal benefit except when they're protecting their young. They risk injury to themselves and wear themselves out. Wow. But yet we come back to this gospel story where Jesus begins his ministry. He goes into the synagogue and he reads from the scroll Isaiah. And he says, this is what I'm going to be about. The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me, chosen me to preach good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, and recovery for the sight of the blind, to release the oppressed, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor, which in the Old Testament is known as the Jubilee year, the celebration year. Now, we might look at that and say, oh, that's so nice. That's so sweet. And the people in the synagogue, they had the same reaction. Oh, isn't that great? Isn't that Joseph's son? He's such a good kid. But all of these things, seriously, from a first century point of view, were things that nobody really wants to have happen. The prisoners are in jail for a reason. And from a first century point of view, the poor are destitute because they're not working hard enough. I'm not saying that's correct, but that was the first century point of view. And the blind can't see because of sin. All you have to do is go to John chapter 9 and read that story and you'll understand what I'm talking about. Jesus clarifies, but they thought those kinds of things were sin-related. And about the only thing you could make a case for is the oppressed, because all of Israel was oppressed by Roman occupation. They had taken over the promised land, but the rest of them, all this other group of people, they're getting what they deserve. That is grace. Getting what you don't deserve. Jesus comes to bring grace, not to be a nice guy, but to draw people to God. In the same way, my bratty husky didn't deserve a ramp for all the things that she has done to my life. The money that I spent, the hours that I put in, not deserved. And humpback whales are bringing grace to the oceans. And for us as the people of God, it's about giving people a glimpse of God through us. Building people up may or may not look like that to you. And that's okay. But certainly we need to remember that we who are strong ought to bear the failings of the weak and not just to please ourselves. See, where people fall, we should want to pick them up. Even when they do it to themselves. And you know, so often we see people like, they did it to themselves. And we do it not because we have to do it, but because we want to do it, because it's an opportunity to give people a glimpse of Jesus. Now, this is directly tied to something I posted in our e-newsletter on Friday about incarnational evangelism. I'm not going to get into that, but just read the article if you haven't yet. It's about being Jesus in people's lives, to build people up again, to strengthen them in their weak spots so that they can rise again and know who is helping them, not us, but the Lord. I mean, it's either that or we become dream stealers. There's a story of a guy named Monty, lives down in Solvang. He is a horse trainer, true story. And as he grew up, his family were all about horse training, and they go from stable to stable, racetrack to racetrack, ranch to ranch to train horses. And so Monty, when he was young, kind of had a checkered history with school. But when he was a senior, he was asked to write a paper about what he wanted to do when he grew up. Now, this is 65 years ago, 70 years ago. And he was so enthralled by this assignment that he sat down and wrote a 7-page paper that someday he wanted to own a horse ranch, that he wanted to have 200 acres, he wanted to have a huge house on this, and he drew pictures. I mean, he had this concept of what he wanted out of life in his head, and he wrote, and it probably brought him great joy. He turned the paper in, and 2 days later, he received an F on the paper with a note that said, "See me," from the teacher. So he went to the teacher, and he asked, you know, why did I receive an F? And she told him, now remember, this is a long time ago. School was different back then. She basically said, unrealistic dream. You get an F because you have too good of an imagination. That you will never have that. That requires money, that requires breeding stock, that requires materials. You and your family are horse trainers. You will never achieve that. So rewrite the paper with a more realistic goal and I'll reconsider your grade. And, you know, he chewed on it. He asked his dad about it. And ultimately, he decided to turn in the paper as is. And he said to the teacher, essentially, you can keep the F. I'll keep the dream. Well, many, many years later, he has the ranch. He has the house. And he does horse train. And it's still there. I looked it up. It's still there. And he even opens the ranch up to kids for field trips. And at one point, the teacher that gave him that grade actually came and brought students to his ranch many years later. And she said to him, she apologized to him. And she said, in years, I've been somewhat of a dream stealer. I look back over some of the years that I've taught, and I took and I stole children's dreams, and fortunately, you did not give up on yours. Don't let anyone steal your dreams, no matter what. But here's what I tell you. The stakes are higher because it's not about dreams for us. It's about ultimate reality for us. It's bigger than dreams. Jesus is not a fairy tale. It's not a story for the weak to give comfort, but who knows if it's true? Jesus loves us in the world so much that he died in order that we could spend an eternity together getting to know him better. That's what's at stake for us. So give people a glimpse of Jesus this week. Amen.